Hello and welcome to the seventh podcast of the Summer Library. I am Paul Sorrell, along with T.R. Parker. T.R., how are you, my friend?
I'm well, Paul. Is this really the seventh
episode? It is.
Seven.
The number of perfection.
Done quite a few. Yeah, the lucky seven.
And we have the perfect
seven
guest.
Deadly sins. And
For the seventh podcast.
We do. We have a really exciting guest today. Professor Philip Ryan is here from the language department and English as a second language, and we're really happy to – he's staring at me. I'm not sure. We lost our microphones. Everything has been in disarray, but we're hoping to get it all back together and before school starts.
Yeah, and speaking of school starting – that comes up next week. And so our summer vacation days, the slow days in the library,
are over.
They're gone.
They're
man.
Over. Oh, yeah. This week I've been crazy busy. All of the athletes are back.
Yeah. Did I see the women's soccer team in the cafeteria today?
All of the athletes have been eating in the – they get little meal cards, and they've been eating in the cafeteria, and they've been eating three meals a day. I guess they give them food so they can perform well. And cross country is back, and – I would imagine. I guess some of the sports are not back yet, like basketball and things like that, because their seasons don't start.
Or American football.
Do we have American football? But we are going into NCAA.
But we're undefeated since the 50s.
Oh, right, right. Yeah. And we did a display on football.
That's right.
Remember that?
Yeah, ball? Union used to have football.
Tonight is the kickoff, like, banquet or dinner that Professor Ryan's really excited to be a part of. Everybody, I know I'm looking forward to it, and everybody being back, and there will be a G.K. Chesterton impersonator, and great, great author and writer. We're excited about that. We've got some new resources in the library. One of the things that we got was a collection of full text. Before, we only had dissertation abstracts,
right,
which if you obviously should know what dissertations and theses are. They're when you go to, you know, write your, you know, PhD and do your PhD or some advanced degree. You usually write a long dissertation, and there's some really, really quality work done. As a matter of fact, whenever I'm research coaching, I usually come across a really relevant dissertation or thesis that I would love to get into the hands of the researcher, my students. But we haven't been able to get those all of the time unless we did ILL or bought them or something like that. But now, through ProQuest, we have a really big collection of dissertations and theses that have been published at major research universities all around the country. And they're full text. You can find the dissertations and thesis link on the databases A to Z page, also on the research guides that we've created to help you kind of navigate through the library resources that are available. And we have that available, so check that out. Very excited.
So to maybe have we that. Could look so, at Dr. Philip Ryan's dissertation. Someday.
Yes, I'm
maybe
sure we
there.
Could. Yeah.
Maybe we could read on it.
I bet it is.
It's,
I bet
it's
it is.
It's more of a beach read. I think you'd have to take it and have,
well, I'll put it on my Kindle. Yeah.
Yeah, you really could. It's nice. Just don't get any suntan oil on your Kindle.
Okay.
No.
All right.
It'd be nice.
And speaking of the beach, I guess we should just jump right into it. You're headed out to California soon, right?
Yeah, so first let's introduce our wonderful guest.
Look, yeah, who do we have? Who do we have
Well,
today?
We have Dr. Philip Ryan, Associate Professor of Language and Coordinator of the ESL program. And,
well,
you know, I didn't get the memo for the ties. You both have ties on, and I don't. And Philip,
it's a little awkward for us right now because we're noticing you don't have that.
Yeah, I feel
you didn't want to say anything.
You brought this up.
Yeah, well, you didn't want to say anything. But I like the tie, Philip.
Thanks.
Very nice.
Thank you very much.
It's,
thanks.
Since this is something no one can see, it's a purple and gold and green silk plaid tie. Very nice.
Yes, very nice.
Not unlike your Madras shirt. Some of the same colors.
It does. Yeah. I don't know if I'd wear them together. But
you would.
Not, I don't know if I would wear that one together, but we could, maybe.
But it's very nice, and TR has the nice pin dot tie.
Yeah.
And I'm tieless.
We just had a conversation about that tie.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Where'd you get
that
tie? I used to own a men's clothing store.
You know, a gentleman never reveals where he shops.
Okay, so this is Steinmark.
Okay.
The shirt's Target. The pants are Banana Republic.
Very nice.
And shoes are online.
Nice.
website for the Zappos. Shoes?
Yeah.
I got my shoes from Endless.com. Have you?
I've never been to Endless.
Yeah, Endless is great.
Really?
Yeah, free two-day shoes.
And
yeah.
I got my shoes from an online retailer who I can't remember.
You did, really?
Shoes.com?
Shoes.com is good.
Shoes are online. Hello to Dr. Philip
Hello
Ryan.
To Dr. Philip Ryan. We're very excited to have Dr. Philip Ryan here today. I've gotten a chance to get to know how should we call it, Professor Ryan, over the past year through Philip. I'm never sure about that because, you know, I'm just never sure what to say. But
I've been called worse.
Through running and through helping out with some of your students and your courses, just getting to know you on a professional and a personal level, and I've really enjoyed that. He makes a great banana pudding.
Thanks. It is good.
And it's
from scratch, too.
Yes, it is, which is incredible. So thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm very flattered.
Yeah.
Very excited.
And so we'll go ahead and Paul is motioning for everybody to come in close to the microphone. We don't have our regular microphones today. And so we just want to just ask Professor Ryan Philip a few questions about just about his education and coming to Union and all the things that have to do with what he does here. And so
You're going to cover it all.
We want to know all.
Got it.
One day we will fall to our knees and weep, and then we will know all things.
Nice.
But probably not today.
Okay.
But you did tell us about where you went to college.
Sure.
Tell us, where did you go to college?
Sure. So I was an undergrad here at Union.
Okay.
And
awesome.
I double majored in Spanish and English.
What year did you graduate?
91. I graduated in 91. And so I was a double in Spanish, in English and communications, and I minored in Spanish. So I was already sort of setting myself up for a number of varying interests in terms of my own development. And then I did a master's at the University of Memphis in the English department, and I had two concentrations there, one in ESL and one in composition theory.
Now, ESL, tell us.
Sure.
ESL, what does that stand for?
ESL stands for English as a Second Language. In K-12 settings, it might be known as ELL, programming. There's a lot of acronyms. And it really is an emergent discipline, as it were, that looks at the complicated nature of teaching language to someone who doesn't speak it. So there's ESL for second language learners and EFL for foreign language learners. And so that was one of my areas of study in my master's program. And then I took an instructorship there, a TA-ship and became an instructor, and I got to teach ESL at the University of Memphis, which was real interesting. And I got to teach in their intensive English program, which I thoroughly enjoyed. Mm-hmm. And then I came to Union, and at the same time, I finished my PhD at Indiana University of Pennsylvania in rhetoric and linguistics.
Now, Indiana and Pennsylvania are two different states, right?
So, last I heard.
Yeah, but there's actually an Indiana University in Pennsylvania. How does that work?
Well, okay, so it's a part of the Pennsylvania Board of Regents system. I get this all the time. It's a part of the Board of Regents system with Pennsylvania, and Indiana, Pennsylvania is a small town about an hour east of Pittsburgh, and in fact, it is Jimmy Stewart's hometown.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
James.
It's a Wonderful Life.
Zuzu's Petals.
Yeah, oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really neat. And it's very scenic. It's in the Laurel
Smith
Highlands.
Mr. Smith goes to Washington.
There you go. So it's in the Laurel Highlands, and it's very pretty. And it's a nice program, and they do summer intensive coursework. So I flew up, and I just flew back and forth for comps and for coursework and all those other things while I was working here.
You got your PhD.
Really?
I did. I went to your reception.
Oh, you got cake.
I don't know if I ate it, but I was there.
Well, you do have an aversion to sweets.
Well, not terrible.
Paul is very
No.
careful about. Yeah, and he works out a lot too. He works out a lot.
Yeah, well.
So really fit guy. It's good to work with such. But I actually want to not digress, but take a step back because that was quick overview. We have to watch you. But thank you for being. I want to ask you about your time at Union. Why did you come to? Were you from the area?
Yes, I was. And I started out at the University of Memphis. I was sort of the unlikely college student. I didn't really have a lot of good advising and guidance. So I started out at the University of Memphis.
And so you came to Union.
Yeah, nice. I started out at the University of Memphis, which at the time was Memphis State University. And my grades were good. I did well.
Yeah.
But I didn't really love my first year there. It was a bit of a commuter school, especially at that time, mm-hmm. sort of a suitcase campus or college,
right.
what we call it.
Yeah.
So I just didn't really feel very connected. And so suddenly university became something sort of pragmatic. I just needed to get it taken care of.
Yeah, right.
So
a job. You go and you leave and you
get it done. As it were.
And Union is not that.
Well, actually, in point of fact, it was for me at the time.
Okay.
So I could work. I could save money and other things. So I came to Union.
I see.
And then the rest is history.
Yeah. Now, being in that because I look at Union and places like Union, that I've always been drawn to small schools because it's more than just get it done. It's more than just pragmatic outlook on education. It's a community of learners.
Well, and right.
But did you get to experience any of that at Union? Did you spend any time in the library? And I guess what sorry.
Do you have any more questions? Okay, so I think first I want to say that by pragmatically I mean that Union, because Union has smaller class ratios and has real intentional approaches to its advising, for example, it enabled me to have the type of mentorship and guidance through that undergraduate program that I really didn't mm-hmm. have quite as robustly at the University of Memphis. So that's actually why I meant about that.
And, of course, Union was in many ways a much different place, was it not, than it is now?
Dramatically different.
And yeah.
Absolutely.
And so things have really
that's very
grown and changed, and I feel a really positive growth.
Good.
And not just growth in terms of getting bigger, but – going in the right direction.
Like, what do you mean by that?
Like, people like you. Like, you know, people like you being here.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
That's nice.
That's one thing. So back to your career. So you went to this beautiful place in like, Indiana, Pennsylvania.
Right. So I'd gotten a job at Union as an instructor. And I was in a PhD program at Psych, and I loved it. It was fascinating. But it wasn't precisely what I wanted. And so I met a guy who had gotten a degree, his PhD from the school, and he was a pretty sharp fellow, and I liked him. And so that's what I did. I went. It was lovely. It was in the summertime. The temperatures were great. And we would go see Falling Water, the Frank Lloyd Wright house, or we'd go into Pittsburgh, into the city when we didn't have time. But the courses were very intensive. It was 12 doctoral hours every summer. And so the faculty would do their publishing and research during their regular year, and then they would jump in and teach these summer intensive courses. And so we would read 100, 110 pages a night. It's a lot of information to absorb. But some of the very books I read in that program I've actually used with students today, and it greatly informed what I do now.
So at what point in time did you decide this English as a second language is something that you wanted to be a part
of? I've got an answer for that. So I had graduated from Union with an undergrad in English and Comm Arts and a minor in Spanish, and I really didn't know where I wanted to head. And I thought about law school, but I got a job at a law firm, and I didn't like what I saw, so I threw my LSAT packet away. And then in the back of my mom's church magazine, there was a flyer for teaching English in Okinawa, Japan, an ad. And I thought, wow, that would be utterly cool. Now, given I'd never traveled outside the United States before, but for some reason that really snagged my interest. And so I thought, you know, that sounds great. I think I'll do that. So I started looking for master's programs that did ESL, and I looked at several, but I felt Memphis would be the best bet. And that's what started my career. And other than flying through Narita Airport, I still haven't done anything in Japan. So that's where it got started.
Where have you done things? Where have you traveled?
I've done teacher workshops in Brazil, in Thailand. I've done some work in China, not much. And Morocco was fantastic. Loved it. And that's where my ESL's taken me. I've also presented in England at Oxford University at their research. I'm a member of their research organization. It's the Oxford Ethnography and Education Association. So I've been there and presented. That's another international trip I've taken. But ESL's
really
taken me abroad. Yeah.
Yeah.
And who would have thought that, I guess, when you know, you were...
Certainly, my faculty would have.
But
I'm sure it was a big shock, you know, because I really was sort of a late bloomer. I just didn't... And I think that's one thing about my classroom now. I'm drawn to students who are passionate about the content, but they don't necessarily have to be the star performers, because I wasn't that person. You often hear in education about you have the superstars and the strugglers, but then there's sort of these kids in the middle who seem to fall through the cracks. And that was sort of me to some degree. I was a very late bloomer, and I never developed great study skills, and I was having to learn things on the fly that for other people they had been exposed, you know, for other people it had been easy for a long mm-hmm. time. So I was sort of an 11th hour academic, as it were.
So was there anything particularly that changed for you in that, like, in terms of being a late bloomer? What was it that sort of clicked in that
well,
sort
I think
of
there were some
caused
key,
you to bloom?
You know, it's interesting. There's a retired faculty member here who taught in business, and I'll have to think of his name. I'm so sorry. He's a pastor of a church on Parkway. I'm drawing a blank. And we had this conversation one time, and the notion of sponsorship is what he calls it. And I think there were some key points in my development where teachers, educators, and others saw potential and promise in me and sort of sponsored me in maybe even small or subtle ways at the time. But I think those allowed for me to begin to see myself in incremental ways more seriously in terms of my own intellectuality and my own development. So it was sort of a slow growth process.
Wow, that's great. And so what is your – and so now being at Union, what has your teaching experience been like at Union? And you know,
great. Yeah. You know, it's – I'm really fortunate.
You have said that.
Yeah, because I've gotten to work with Dr. Cindy Jane and Dr. Jean Marie Walls as my department chairs, as it were. And, you know, it's been really wonderful because I've gotten to do a lot of creating and innovating here. And I just had a conversation with Gene Fant about ideation and such. And I think that I've been so fortunate because I've been able to create two undergraduate programs in the languages department and to be a big part of what the intercultural studies program is doing at the undergraduate and graduate level. And I think at other schools and other state schools where that disciplinary cordoning off and sort of regimented, narrowly focused expectation for faculty is so dominant. I think to be able to try my hand at a number of things here has been really great. So, for example, I think it's been great.
How long has there been an ESL program here at Union?
I came in 97, and I started the major in the fall of 1990, either 8 or 99. It's been a while. So the TESOL major, which is a full undergraduate major, and it trains young people to be language teachers stateside and abroad, it's been around since about 99. And then we added a second major in that I worked on and developed in about 3 years ago called Applied Linguistics. And so what it does is it allows people who are fascinated by or have a gift for language to study it, but not to have to take on its pedagogy or its teaching. So mm-hmm. we're really trying to answer to a broader market in that sense.
And you were the point person in making all those things happen.
Pretty much. I mean, certainly we work as a collective. I mean, we work as a group, and I couldn't have done it alone. And right. with Doctors Walls and Jane's guidance and my peers' feedback, it's been a great run. And both programs are robust and they're doing what they're supposed to do. I feel very fortunate about that.
But now Professor Cindy Jane and Jean Marie Walls, they teach very different subjects, right? I mean they even though you work collectively as a department, they teach very different things.
Well, in the last 10 years, Dr. Jane has moved more into the intercultural studies domain.
Sure.
Although she still does teach in the languages department.
Yes.
But she's moved more into an administrative role and teaching role in intercultural mm-hmm. studies. And Dr. Walls does the same. We all have shared space.
Sure.
It's sort of a Venn diagram in terms of what scale.
Yeah. It's very interesting. I know that Jean Marie Walls was teaching a course in French literature.
Right. She has her PhD in French.
Sure.
Right. So yeah, she's the French. She's a French prof along with Vicky Malone.
Sure.
And then Dr. Jane is a Spanish prof mm-hmm. who still will teach an occasional class for us when she's able.
Yeah. Wow. It's a really kind of seamless interworking that seems to work well for us.
Well,
right
thank
now.
You. We think it's seamless too. I mean, it's complicated, but I think again because the administration has allowed us to. I don't want to say cross-pollinate, maybe cross-pollinate or to at least work in a transdisciplinary or a cross-disciplinary way. It's really enhanced our appreciation for an integrative intellectual pursuit mm-hmm. so that for certain points of inquiry, we've grown to believe that an interdisciplinary framework actually responds to more complex issues more appropriately than, say, a disciplinary one alone.
Now, where do your students wind up? Once they mm-hmm. get this degree, sure. they graduate, what's the next step for them?
Well, I love my students. They are amazing, and they never cease to amaze me with what they end up doing. I think broadly in the TESOL major, you have two to three categories of students. One couples my major with an ed certification, and they become K-12 ESL teachers. One group wants to go abroad and teach EFL in foreign language countries. And the third group, and which sort of transcends both sometimes, are students who want to go on and do master's level work. And so those have sort of been the broad emergent areas in TESOL. In applied linguistics, we're looking more at graduate programming. We're looking at Bible translation interests, shared coursework with biblical languages, for example, not shared coursework, but sharing students with biblical languages, for example, for Wycliffe work and things of that nature.
And speaking of masters, you're involved in a master's program.
That's right.
Through Union. But not here in Tennessee.
It is here. Oh, yes, it is.
Well, the campus.
The program.
Well, you know what I'm saying.
I don't.
You're going somewhere. Where are you going?
Okay, so we have an MA in Intercultural Studies. And
we have a satellite campus.
Yes. Thank you, Dave Matthews.
I think, yeah.
You're right. So the MA in Intercultural Studies is a wonderful program. It's here on the main campus, and we also offer it at Golden Gate Baptist Theological Seminary in lovely Mill Valley, California. And I teach a lot of the qualitative research course. It's a qualitative research course sequence, and I'm a trained qualitative researcher. So I teach a lot of the courses in that course sequence, and I also teach a sociolinguistics course in that program. And I teach on this campus and in California. So I'll get on a plane tomorrow morning and fly out for a 5-day stint.
So it's just, is it a 5-day intensive?
Yes. One course has two intensive weekends in it.
Okay.
A Thursday afternoon, an all-day Friday, and an all-day Saturday. We don't do any online work.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and then you'll fly back on Sunday then?
I fly back on Sunday.
And get ready to go next week.
That's right.
So you're looking forward to, how many trips is this for you out there?
I think about the, I've averaged, I think I added it up. I think I'm on my 16th or 17th trip since 2004.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's a great setup. And I love the students there, too. They're great.
Professor Ryan.
Yes.
Really quickly, can you tell us some more about your current research interest? What direction are you going now? Where's your mind going?
Hold on, it's really fascinating.
Okay.
Actually, it really is.
We are fascinated.
So, you know, I'm really interested in qualitative research, and I'm also really interested in interdisciplinarity. And so one thing we do in the MAIS is the qualitative research sequence is an interdisciplinarily framed one. So what that means is the students are learning to do qualitative research, but they're learning to do it in an integrative way. So they're learning all of the tenets of qualitative research that would apply across the academy, but they're also learning how to do that in an integrative way, pulling in sources from a variety of disciplines, for example, et cetera. So I'm interested in that interface, and right now I've had a good run working, presenting at and doing some research on the development of an integrative qualitative framework amongst students. And so I've done a project this spring with students using Randy Phillips' guidance through the IRB. I've worked on a project where I'm exploring MAIS students' attitudes towards the interface of interdisciplinarity and qualitative research methods, and a couple of other things like research ethics, which I think is a big, big part and should be a big part of a Union program. So right now my research area is my interest is in research development amongst grad students.
Wow.
Well, that should keep you busy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. So what's interesting is they're learning how to do qualitative research, and I'm conducting qualitative research on them. So while they're collecting data, they're learning how to be participants in a project at the same time.
And they learn how these qualitative research methods on an undergraduate level, right?
No, it's graduate. It's graduate.
So, okay.
No, I do teach
because
an
it's
undergraduate
not common to
here.
Learn those sorts of skills at an undergraduate.
It's not. I teach an undergraduate research methods for the Intercultural Studies mm-hmm. undergrad program.
Yeah.
But it's more of an integrative look. We don't really focus on qualitative solely in that space. So we're looking at what it means to ask complex questions and to topicalize your research so that it's not disciplinarily driven, but it's topically driven.
Sure.
So, for example, if you want to study, one of my grad students right now is doing a project where she's conducting a qualitative case study of Kurdish and Iraqi expats who live in Nashville, and they volunteered to be translators during the Iraqi War. So they moved to the States, they signed up with the military to go back and be interpreters, and then they came back. So you're looking at some really interesting entry, reentry issues in terms of cultural identity, familial structure and strain, et cetera.
Right.
So, you know, that type of research might warrant culture studies, specific area culture studies. It might warrant some sociology or anthropology. It would warrant some intercultural communication. It might warrant her reading some fiction or films about life in those spaces. So there's really no cordoning off of what would be available and accessible.
Wow. Yeah. Qualitative research. So, okay. So
sounds like a lot of good things going on for you and your department. And we appreciate you stopping in. And giving us some of your time before you head out.
You're very welcome.
We want to thank you so much for taking your time to be here, to talk with us, help us in providing you so that we can help you provide the best resources to meet all of those needs that you just discussed.
Thanks.
We want to wish you the best. And
thank you very much.
And I was sort of hoping to get in your suitcase to go to California, but
you can just,
I do have a few things going on here. So
there
I guess
are future
I'll have
trips.
To hang around. Okay.
Okay.
So at some point. But have a great trip out there. Come back to us.
I'll
and
do it.
Thanks for being here today.
Thank you very much.
And just remember, Summer Library.
Where studying every day could help you perform better.
Academically.
See you next time, everybody.
See you, everybody.
Happy fall.
Nice.